Good morning, everybody from Finland, and it's early, relatively early in the morning here, and I guess maybe we're speaking mostly now to Europe and to Australia and New Zealand, with a few people maybe on the West Coast joining us. Of course, all these things are available to you later. If you're not able to make the actual broadcast, it will show up either on, excuse me, on either on Makara, makara.us, or on YouTube, or occasionally I send them out on Hightail. So I've got three different ways of sending these, provided all the links work. Well, we're about to start a new section today. It is somewhat a continuation of our work with the all triangles deriving from this great super triangle of the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades. And of course, one of the possible substitutions for Sirius, which he doesn't emphasize too much, is the little bear itself. So we have the father, the Great Bear, and then we have the son aspect, S-O-N, which is the little bear and or Sirius, and then the mother aspect, which is the Pleiades. Yes, I do see a few of you out there from the West Coast, and well, welcome to you, and welcome to all the people in Australia and New Zealand and the early birds in Europe. Okay. Let's just have a little, just a little alignment, you know. And you can feel, I think, how potent is silence to help to align a group. And our purpose, you know, it's a little different from the way we work on Wednesdays. Specifically with the meditation and music and so forth. This is to try to understand how far-reaching this triangular arrangement really is. You know, it affects our etheric body. It affects and sacralizes eventually our planetary etheric body. And it seems to extend into the extra systemic realm, the cosmic realm. So perhaps underlying the whole etheric body of space as we know it is the arrangement of triangles. Now there is one maybe more advanced type of etheric interlocking, and maybe we've heard of that. It is the interlocking of circles, such as found in the etheric body of the sun. And so we move from the square to the triangle and finally to the circle. So I suppose certain entities have this circular interlocking and maybe certain areas of space. But for right now, we're busy trying to turn squares into triangles. And that is the esoteric bisecting of the square. So I just want to say hi to those of you who are here. I do this really only once, so if you come a little later, I appreciate your presence and but will not again probably mention your names unless I happen to call on you because you want to have a statement or a question. So hi and good morning, Anne and Anne-Marie. Hi, Antoinette. Hi, Christopher and Karen and Lona and Marissa, Martha, Natnia, Nienke, and Sumiti. Welcome. Tiu, Vera, Winnie, and Anne. Veronica, well, welcome everyone. And over here on the staff side, Michael Stacy is up in the middle of the night helping us get through this. He's on the Eastern time zone, I think, pretty much, and it's quite early in the morning there. Okay, friends, so now we're starting a new section. And this is it, triangles of force and planets. We've worked through our Aquarius period with lots of thought and group gathering and group concentration and quite a number of broadcasts and webinars. So certainly we've done our concentration on Aquarius, and maybe already you can feel the Aquarian energy changing from Capricorn. I think I do. I feel that. And, you know, these energies, we cannot just name them as abstractions. They have to be detectable. Some change in patterns of energy has to be noticed, and maybe the change of interactions around us. So the type of Capricorn interaction is quite different, really, from the Aquarian interaction. And I think I noticed that, you know, somehow on the at the full moon, it was just different from Capricorn. The rulers are different, the rays are different. And that's the kind of sensitivity that all of us seek to develop in time. That's very important. And sometimes you can practice just with the changes of the moon's sign. Even though it's considered to be a kind of a dead planet, there is a thought form effect associated with its cycles, and you can, I think, feel the difference when the moon changes sign. Anyway, this type of sentiency or feeling is important for someone who wants to know what type of energies are available at any given time. Now, this section here, we'll begin it at least. We're on number 26 in this particular series. Right now, we've been, or do I have 25? Well, oh, wait a second, end of 26. Oh, goodness, then how can it be? Ah, it's 25 January, that's it. And I seem to be on number 27. Well, I'll have to check a little later with Michael on that one. So this is about triangles of force. And maybe he would consider the planets as triangles of force, and the triangles of energy more the zodiacal and other constellations. This whole question about energy and force is not so easy to discriminate. You know, sometimes he speaks of the Shambhala force, sometimes of the Shambhala energy. I think when we use the word force, we sometimes mean a targeted application of the reservoir of energy associated with any source. The targeted application of the reservoir of energy associated with any source. Maybe targeted application of the reservoir of energy associated with any source. And that this is force. But, you know, sometimes he's not absolutely discriminating in this, or at least it's hard to detect. But generally, you know, in the human being, we speak of soul energy and personality force. And, well, it varies. So just stay alert as to how these terms are used. Okay. He's going on and saying, at the same time, it will be obvious to you in relation to these simple triangles, okay, maybe for him, certain interlocking triangles also emerge. As, for instance, the zodiacal triangle of Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn. I think you can see that here in this chart that Joe made for us here. Leo, Pisces, Capricorn. Saturn, Uranus, Mercury. Shambhala, hierarchy, humanity. You find triangles vertical, you find triangles horizontal. And the great triangle behind all of this, for the moment, not saying it's the ultimate triangle, we have the Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades, and maybe even the triangle of the three aspects, will, wisdom, and activity, or active intelligence, which is related to the monad, and not just man's monad, but the monad of the greater beings in the cosmos that surrounds our planet and solar system. All right. So other interlocking triangles emerge. Leo, Pisces, Capricorn, and the allied planetary triangle of Saturn, Uranus, Mercury. Okay. So certainly Saturn and Uranus are two venerable deities, and they are deities that are associated with the synthesizing planets. Only Neptune is missing. Now, these two triangles, you know, having six factors, pour, there's six streams of force into our three planetary centers at this time, vitalizing and stimulating the planetary triangle of Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity. So we know particularly that Leo is associated with Shambhala, Pisces with hierarchy, and Capricorn with humanity. This we have been studying and getting a feeling for these energies, and how they show up is an important part of our training in the science of triangles and in generally in esoteric astrology and rayology, and that great science behind it all, the science of relations, a cosmic science, the science of relations. Now, behind these three, I guess he's mentioned Shambhala, hierarchy, humanity, stands a cosmic triangle emanating three streams of energy which pour into and through the lesser triangles, and thus potently affecting every kingdom in nature. Now, that's why we're studying this, and that cosmic triangle, which affects every kingdom in nature. And, you know, kingdoms of nature are not just found on one planet. There's a special way that, let's just say, animal, vegetable, mineral shows up on the Earth, within the Earth scheme, but also these kingdoms are showing up in the other planets, even if not in the dense material form that we recognize. So, you know, kingdoms of nature are system-wide. Every planet has its own type of humanity at different stages of development, and probably in terms of form looking very different. But, you know, if you kind of go to the end of your esoteric astrology book. Let's see how we would do that. Like here, maybe. And I'll do this, and then this is esoteric healing, and I just go backwards a little bit. And here are these schools, you know, and obviously there are beings involved in these schools, warriors and scholars and those who aspire, you know, they have different names. And there is a humanity everywhere, however different it may appear in form. Now, certainly we've learned about the humanity on Venus and how advanced it really is compared with the humanity on Earth. And, you know, different names are given, living stones, fiery stones, and so forth. So just go to the end of your esoteric astrology book if you have one, or if you have a CD-ROM, just go to the beginning of esoteric healing and just go back a little bit, and you'll find some of the beings, especially in relation to the human kingdom, that live and express through these various planets. Okay, so the cosmic triangle behind all this is the Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades. And Master Moria kind of suggests that you look up in the sky and develop a relationship, a communion between yourself, your little self here, and these great, magnificent beings who, probably looking around at what they can see of cosmos, consider themselves quite small. And he says, you should say the words, or someone did say the words to these great stellar deities. He said, "Hail, brothers." And in that salutation of daring, his ego vanished. The implications are huge, because we do want to break the egg, you know. We do want to break the enclosure that we call the causal body and or the egoic lotus, and one day we must. That's called the fourth degree, and liberate the inner life onto the triadal levels and even further as time goes on. So on this path of evolution, we're involved in a series of liberations that we call initiation. And the liberations have a lot to do with the energies we can access, and those energies have a lot to do with their triangular availability. Here's a couple of subsidiary points of interest to the esoteric astrologer, and these might be briefly, we might briefly list in connection with these effective triangles. Why are they effective? He says, using the word effective to imply conditioning and potent in results. And we can invoke these higher triangles, that we can call for the descent of their energy. In the book Esoteric Astrology, I can't turn to the pages right now, but DK oftentimes has a triangle above some recipient of a lesser degree of development. Like there might be a triangle up here consisting of sacred planets, or a combination of sacred planets and zodiacal constellations, and down here is the little Earth. So we, as the little human being, can invoke certain great triangles, and it will be effective in our life. And if we work in group formation, it will be even more effective, let me say. Okay. Now, in this present world cycle, all results are of unusual significance and also unusually emphasized in human consciousness. There's such an intensification going on. Of course, we feel it, and we wonder why our lives may be under such quite at times a crushing pressure, and it's because of the change of age and the change of great cycles. Now, just think about this. We are en ending a 2,500 year, or maybe more precisely, 2,160 year cycle of Pisces. It's the normal equinoctial age. And in 2,117, the age of Aquarius is beginning. But we are also in the process of ending a 25,000 year, approximately 25,000 year cycle of Pisces, giving way to a great Platonic year ruled by Aquarius, a 25,000 year cycle ruled by Aquarius. And as if that weren't enough, at the time of the Christ's last appearance, some 2,000 years ago, there was the ending of a 250,000 year cycle. It doesn't say what it was ruled by. Maybe it's too big to be considered as ruled by any zodiacal sign. And cycles don't just end and not begin again. So we are in the general early stages of a launching time for another 250,000 years. And that it probably doesn't end there. The occult story is that it takes about 250,000 years for the seven solar systems, our system and the associated solar systems, to follow their orbit around the Pleiades. Now, that has yet to be confirmed by our astronomical science and is doubted by many, but at least the story in occultism is that's what happens. So things are really intense at the moment, obviously. And under this intensity, we either handle energies correctly and in line with the divine plan, or we lose our bearings and just do what we desire to do, as so many people seem to do it. They don't have a higher guiding star. So anyway, we have here two subsidiary points of interest, and I think he takes up Saturn and Leo. Okay, so now sometimes I don't know. Saturn is a naked eye star. You can kind of see it as a kind of brownish yellow point at certain times of the year and under certain atmospheric conditions, and we certainly don't see it with the naked eye as if its rings were there. But we have some wonderful photographs of Saturn, and also we can certainly see this dominating constellation that we call Leo. Okay, so Saturn, through which energy flows from Leo. Now, you wouldn't normally expect that, because Leo in conventional astrology is an energy in which Saturn is weakened. Saturn, the dull, prosaic, plodding planet, always limiting and focusing, and Leo, this great, splendid, radiatory source. But anyway, in esoteric work, Saturn is deeply connected with Leo. They both have a strong first-ray component via Shambhala to humanity. And it says Saturn governs two decanates in Capricorn. Well, it just depends on which way the wheel is turning. The average man will enter via the 30th degree of Capricorn, seeming to go backwards. And well, its rulers might, from one perspective, be considered Saturn. And then we go through to the other rulers. And the disciples and initiates and more advanced human beings enter at the very beginning, ruled by Saturn. I have kind of a Oh, where is it? A decanate chart here. This is not what I'm looking for. I pulled in a decanate chart. Yeah, maybe it's here. And they're in landscape view. Okay. And from a certain perspective, we can understand a double rulership of Capricorn by Saturn because the orthodox ruler of Capricorn is Saturn, and the esoteric ruler is also Saturn. But this particular chart of decanate rulers, sometimes in my classes, I've gone over these. Saturn does not really show up as the ruler of two decanates. The wheel of consciousness, which is the more advanced wheel, has Saturn, Venus, and the Sun veiling Mercury, Vulcan, and well, maybe Mercury and Vulcan are enough. I think perhaps so. Sun, Mercury, Vulcan. Okay, so Saturn is just the ruler of the first decanate associated with the arrow, the Sagitta, the arrow of pain and sort of crucifixion as you enter that particular sign. But it doesn't really rule two decanates unless we consider coming in from one direction this way and coming in from another direction. So anyway, to me anyway, DK's statement there is a little bit obscure, but I just take it at face value and go on, knowing that Saturn does at least rule twice different kinds of people who are born in or under Capricorn. So it says it governs two decanates, hence its extreme potency today in the triangle of humanity. Now, this is the next statement is very important because it shows the ray one nature of Saturn, and one of the reasons that it's so important in the disciples' horoscope. Saturn breaks up existing conditions by the force of its energy impact, thus enabling the influence of Mercury to be more fully expressed. So it is as if Saturn has a preliminary function in order to liberate the power of Mercury. Now this becomes very important in the Aquarian age, not just in relation to Capricorn. We have a couple of things here that relate Saturn and Mercury to Capricorn in different ways, but what are the decanate rulers of Aquarius? Well, we go in via Saturn for the first 720 years or so, and then comes the Aquarian decanate lasting another 720 of Mercury. So we go through a lot of karmic stuff and are liberated by bringing our attitudes and our actions in line with the divine plan and in line with the law. And when we do that, the great effect of Mercury is more free, and we're liberated into all kinds of ability to manipulate energies, to receive energies. We're liberated into the possibility of many different levels of mind. So I hope I'm being clear. One of the ways Saturn rules Capricorn, it rules orthodoxly and esoterically. So that's two. And then Venus rules the hierarchically for initiates and higher types of consciousness. But we also go in via Saturn to the age of Capricorn, usually. And from another perspective, we go in through the Sun, Mercury, and Vulcan. And that's a different setup. Anyway, we'll just take it at face value of what he said and more. Excuse me, more will appear to clarify our understanding of it. So, in your chart, when you're looking at your house position of Saturn and its sign and its aspects. Think of this for the disciple, which we are trying to be, right? Just think of this, that Saturn is not only blocking and obstructing and somehow making things difficult, you know, but is actually breaking up existing conditions, which are not necessarily archetypal conditions, by the force of its energy impact. Saturn is heavy. Even though it's a light gaseous planet, it weighs upon you until you perform according to karma or the law. So just think, you know, I mean, some of the heaviest burdens that you are going to carry have to do with where Saturn is placed and in what sign and what aspects it makes. I've just been experiencing, you know, Sun in Aries, Saturn is in Capricorn, there's a Saturn square. And I would say, you know, it's been, for me, I've detected the weight of the period and the slowing down until one really deals with things one has to deal with. Maybe you have different experiences. At the end of it all, certain existing conditions should be broken up so there's greater liberation. Okay, so Saturn has not only its third ray nature, which is connected to its monad and maybe to its soul, it has a first ray nature also, either connected to its personality or maybe its soul. I can't be exactly sure, but three and one are the major influences of Saturn, and there's some kind of structuring effect of the seventh ray. It's mostly hard line rays, and it rules the concrete mind too, with its fifth ray generic quality. Okay, anyway, it opens the door to Mercury, you know, and Mercury burns away illusion, and in Aries, the path stands clear. So the vision, now notice he's talking about Mercury now, and how Saturn prepares the way. See, that's how it works with triangles. One planet can prepare the way for another in a particular cycle. Saturn prepares the way for the vision, which is conferred by Mercury. Mercury always has to do with sight, and either one of the eyes may be involved at different periods of human evolution, either the right eye of intuition or the left eye of manas. Mercury can be all those. So you need to get rid of a lot of karmic stuff. There have to be a lot of adjustments in terms of right carrying out of the plan before the amazing radiation of Mercury can confer its insights upon you. The vision, then, the vision, and we all need one, right? First comes the vision, then comes the revelation. The vision can then be intuitively perceived. And we do know that Mercury rules on five levels, and the next to the highest level is the level of intuition on the Buddhic plane, where it's associated with Scorpio and with the human monads. So the vision can then be intuitively perceived when obstructions have been removed. Now, this is obvious. The removal of obstructions, but first you have to feel them, is Saturnian. And the vision conferred has everything to do with the intuitive flash and impress of Mercury. So let's not ever stop thinking. Let's not ever imagine that Saturn is just a planet of obstruction. It notifies of obstruction so these obstructions can be removed. Okay, so that's about Saturn and Mercury, and they are very important in Capricorn and very important, as we've seen, as decanate rulers in Aquarius. Now, Leo, I suppose, and Capricorn. Leo is one of the birth signs of the zodiac. What is birth? You know, it's like initiation. It's like an entry into an entirely new arena, or, you know, cyclically repeating arena, but it seems new at the time. So something new is emerging with Leo. What is it? It connotes the birth of self-consciousness, as we know. Now, that happened long ago. And when we first became from being non-individualized animal man, we became individualized animal man, and Leo was very prominent at the time in the planetary horoscope. So it's a sign of individualization. It's also a sign, the most human, we're told, of all the signs. Capricorn is also a birth sign. We celebrate Christmas, you know, and it's the birth of the Christ, and it's every Christmas time under the first few degrees of Capricorn. We're celebrating the Christmas festival with a lot of joy, you know. Capricorn is also a birth sign because it is also an aspect of one of the arms of the cardinal cross, and that cardinal cross consisting of Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn do initiate or bring into being. That cross does initiate and brings into new states of being. So, Aries is, I think, creation. Cancer is manifestation. These are the words he gives. Libra is legislation, and Capricorn is initiation. Okay, so a new sphere, a new contacts, that is what birth really is. Now, and on the cardinal cross, we can sometimes study it and find out either how a very advanced being is operating or how a relative beginner in the spiritual area is operating. Okay, so this has a peculiar relation to humanity, and just think about yourself now and the kind of consciousness you have. It is the birth of the two types of consciousness. Self-consciousness at individualization, correct? Long ago, at least 21 million years ago, and for moon chain humanity, much longer ago, and for the humanity of the previous solar system in very, very ancient days, billions of years ago. It's hard to say what is the exact cycle. Maybe even trillions of years ago. That's how long solar systems can last according to the Brahmanic chronology. So anyway, two types of consciousness. Now, none of us has just been born into self-consciousness. We've been around. We've been around for millions of years. And all of us are striving for an improvement in our Christ consciousness, which really begins at the first initiation and continues to unfold in this system of love, a solar system of divine love, and a planet whose soul ray is the second ray of love wisdom. So from the individual Christ onward to the planetary Christ, the cosmic Christ, it continues to unfold. Where are we in all this, you know? Well, somewhere in the middle and verging on the Christ consciousness. So it's the birth of two types of consciousness. And Capricorn is pretty much that. It's a very, very concrete birth in a way. Now, if you look at I'll give you a little thing here. This is interesting. This is the egoic lotus. This is a Tuya's version of it. I think the colors are quite accurate, as much as we can. Obviously, it's not going to look like that in real life, but for purposes of study, it's quite okay. It takes millions of years to unfold that first petal. And the first series of petals, the first three, are ruled by earth, the next three by water, the next three by fire, and the next three, the synthesis petals, by air. So the love petals by water and the mental petals by fire. These are petals of initiation, and the synthesis petals by air. So we always begin with cardinality, and we go, you know, cardinal, fixed, mutable. This is the sequence in astrology. So just think in those early, really tough days where you're experiencing the school of hard knocks, as it were, and you're coming into contact with all manner of difficulties which have to be surmounted. The very first petal, from my estimation, is not only ruled by Aries, and then you follow that zodiacal order, it's ruled by Capricorn. So remember, the lowest and the highest is found in Capricorn. You know, you have the inverted diamond, and you have the elevated diamond, one pointing downward, one pointing upward. So Capricorn, in a way, rules the beginning of human experience in terms of understanding the density and difficulty of the outer world. So, you know, now we are in different petals at this time, and most of us are, you know, either opening up the fifth petal to its full conclusion or the sixth petal. And if you opened the fifth entirely, you would have taken the first initiation. And if you open the sixth entirely, you would have taken the second initiation. And if you opened petals 7, 8, and 9 entirely, you would have taken the third initiation, and so forth. Okay, so that's all part of developing the Christ consciousness under Capricorn, either the birth of the Christ or a very high expression of the Christ under Capricorn. Now, DK takes a little moment here and asks a question. And it's a question, you know, that as I'm rambling on here and you're listening to some of this and taking notes and seeing what may be of interest to you, maybe it's a question that has occurred to you. At this point, says DK, I would like to pause for a moment and interpolate a word in answer to a perfectly normal question, which is liable to arise in the minds of thinking students and aspirants today. Maybe it has arisen for us, you know. Of what use is all this abstruse and abstract information to a world in agony and a world distressed? Remember, this was a lot of this was written right before the war, the Second World War, and maybe some of it was written during the war. Okay. And so why study such things? And we can even apply that question today. The world is distressed. Our environment is stressed. Our economic interchange is stressed. There is poverty. There is famine. There is disease. There are all kinds of things which seem to be recurring when perhaps we thought we had solved them. So of what use is all this information? And then he tells us, and you know, it applies to people like ourselves who are born later than the people he was writing for at the time. The major usefulness of this imparted information will condition the astrology of the future. Which will condition the astrology of the future. It lies far ahead in the period after the war, when again the field of world service opens and men and women, of course, you know, it's manus is what he means, and men have time for thought and due reflection. In the middle of the war, maybe you don't. You can't sit there meditating, perhaps, when the bullets are flying and the shells are exploding around you. World service is going on now, perhaps in greater volume than ever before. But it is restricted, and this was, you know, the period of the war, to the field of releasing from slavery. Now, the Nazi group would have put all other groups in a condition of slavery. releasing from slavery and alleviation of pain and suffering. So many, what, 50 million people died in World War II, and some of them in the most horrible ways. And therefore, to the more strictly physical forms of help. So service is operative, but the more physical forms of help are the ones that were current at that time. Now a different type of service is coming, and we're in that period now when we should take advantage of it right before the next astrological dispensation comes out around the year 2025. Will it be 2025, 6, 7, a little bit earlier, around the year 2025. Okay, and we're involved in this kind of service, and this book, this information is involved in helping us be involved. So the service to which I here refer is that educational process which will produce the coming civilization and its attendant culture. So as an educator, which many of us having a strong second ray somewhere, either, if you're working with DK, either monadically or in terms of your soul, we are educators. So many of us are educators, and it is a form of service to be an educator that helps produce the coming civilization and its seed of quality, you might say, its attendant culture. This will be based on all the cultural processes of the past and of the present. Culture is the very refined essential energy of a civilization. So all the best of culture past will be brought forward in this synthetic period. Remember how synthetic is the sign Aquarius, how universal, how gathering from all seasons and all directions is Aquarius. Okay, very synthetic. So this will be based on all cultural processes, but will discard all that has produced the disasters of today as far as may be possible. So there's so much human ignorance, so much illusion, so much distorting glamour, so much chaotic Maya. Many of things, these things, will have been discarded in the aftermath of the war and by the time the Christ and his hierarchy reappear. And that means a gradual future usefulness for the knowledge of the underlying potencies. And that's what we're studying here. Now, they do occur in important triangular relationships. And so dealing with this particular subject, we naturally study astrology, rheology, and chakrology, or whatever. We study the triangularization of the great energy sources. But in the period in which we are entering and on ahead, there will be a usefulness for a type of knowledge that this book gives of the underlying potencies. Think about that. Behind the effects are the causes. The underlying potencies are the causes, for they can indicate the lines of least resistance, technique, right, to the emerging good and the developing crises which inevitably lie ahead in the period of reconstruction. And we're certainly still in a period of reconstruction. We have not yet constructed the Aquarian Age, and much of the old Piscean stuff is still with us, some good, of course, and it has to be brought forward. So it will give us skill in action. We need that as disciples in the present time and in the future if we understand the underlying potencies in an esoteric manner. But one potent good can emerge even at this time from a study of these matters, and provided the student of esotericism rests not content with study, using it as an escape from the disastrous present. You know, it's one of the glamours of the second ray to sense the whole and yet remain apart from it, you know, overabsorption in study and so forth, but parallels his understanding of the causes and conditions by a strenuous effort to be of aid in a practical and a definitely physical sense. Now, we can each test ourselves. Do we have that? In some practical and or definitely physical sense, do we come to the aid of the human condition, or are we lost in our studies and do we shun getting our hands dirty, you know? It is a question, especially for second ray types. This is the dominant emerging fact to which all that I have said bears testimony. World conditions today, and you know, let's even include today, precipitated as they are by human greed and ignorance, which means not understanding who you are, what the human being is, are nevertheless, this is what the hierarchy sees, basically conditioned by the will to good, which is the primary quality of the energies and forces coming forth from the great lives in which all that exist live and move and have our being. So the will to good is a great and conditioning inclusive energy. So let's see here. I think what I'll do is just give that a little bit of a highlight. Okay. The law of the universe, and what is law but the working out of the purposes of these all-embracing lives? Think of it. A great life has a purpose. To us, it's a law. So we're working out of the purposes and their impulses and their plans. That is law. Is to all eternity, that's how long the universe lasts, the good of the whole, and naught can arrest this happening. So this is for our encouragement. The good of the whole is always the theme of the law, and even though we seem to have at times delay and danger and even the threatened destruction of the good, it cannot be destroyed. For who can arrest the impact of these energies, he says, which play upon and through our planet? And when I say this, I would at the same time point out that the attitudes of many students, inevitably participants in world events, that such is the law and such is the karma of people and nations, and such is the predetermined destiny, is far from right. Why? Because it encourages encourages passivity, which is not allowed. You know, it's the will of God, I can do nothing, but I am an active change agent helping to manifest the divine plan in the face of evil karma. And we can never rest back and say, well, okay, it's written, it's just what has to happen to them, as if they were different, but they're not. It's all one being. They believe, sometimes sincerely, that all that should be done is simply to wait for results to appear and for karma and destiny to fulfill itself. Then and not till then, all will be well. But they forget that karma fulfills itself in relation to the form nature upon which it expends its energy, and that where there is a static condition and a quiescent attitude, the process moves but slowly. Now, Master Moria says, how do you deal with karma? He says, move fast. Then the arrows of karma will glance off your moving form, and you will be in the process of doing the good, and the result will be far less dire to you. So activity of the right kind is required, and not the passivity that this is fated, that is fated, and I have no part in changing it. The life then within the form will fails to experience the needed forceful awakening. So we really have to get the most out of our energy system and respond. Our dynamic will, I've said here, must be applied to karmic situations, and a passive attitude is delaying and not desirable. And inevitably, then, says the Tibetan, there lies ahead a repetition of the process until the time comes when activity and response is evoked. So if we're just going to be passive about it, we'll be re-presented over and over again with the same situation until we get it right. So our corrective and to the undesirable conditions is demanded, and we have to know the energies if we're going to learn how to correct. A karmically difficult situation is meant to evoke from us some action or response or intervention, and if it does not, we are expressing a subtle attitude of separateness. This then leads to resistance to the apparent karmic necessity and brings about liberation. Notice the apparent karmic necessity. If we say, oh, look, you know, it's their fate to have a famine and to starve and all the rest of it, and we fail to alleviate that, not only are we building up karma for ourselves, but we are actually delaying the manifestation of the divine plan. So we're not allowed to remain passive. Okay, well, I think, I've talked quite a bit here, and it's just about at the end. Only through resistance to evil, he says, you know, Master Mori says, my disciples inherently have that within them which automatically, instinctually feels and resists evil. And I've seen that in quite a number of first-ray types. It's just an immediate detection of the presence of evil even before you've had a chance to think about it. Only through resistance to evil, and in this world period, and in this Kali Yuga, the Dark Yuga, as the Eastern teachers call it, it is an essential and basic attitude. Can karma be brought to an end? Now think about that. Only through resistance to evil can karma be brought to an end. So there is an old saying that says, resist not evil, and yet decay is, at least resist not evil in a stupid manner. And decay is telling us definitely to cultivate our resistance to evil. The law of matter still governs in the three worlds of human experience, and fire by friction, which is the fire of purification, must burn up that which veils the steadily increasing brilliance of solar fire. We're in the process of it right now. Many of us are making the transition from the common cross to the fixed cross. We're burning up a lot of impedimenta, okay? And as we go into the cross of the Christ, the cross of the soul, we're allowing the burning ground of fire by friction to do its work. It is the recognition of solar fire as it shows itself in a transcendental idealism. Think about that. Moving beyond the personality into the realm of the soul, which becomes our ideal, and the higher worlds become our ideal, though we do apply what we discover in a practical manner. It shows itself. Solar fire shows itself. Think of it. How does solar fire show itself? In a transcendental idealism and radiance. Okay. Solar fire by the unintelligent idealist and his simultaneous refusal to cooperate in the period of karmic necessity. So this is the point. Even though we may touch the higher worlds, touch the higher radiance, if we get lost in that and refuse to turn our backs on the great supernal light of initiation which is dawning and refuse to come down the mountain, then we are refusing to cooperate with the expiation of this karma. And we can be considered then, in terms of the plan at least, the unintelligent idealist. So solar fire involves practicality. The unintelligent idealist and his simultaneous refusal to cooperate in the period of karmic necessity. Because of this, that a prolonging and difficult and cruel situation eventuates and leads him individually to sink deep into glamour. If we don't apply the solar fire we contact after burning away the obstructions by a solar fire, then we sink into distortion and veiling and glamour. So that's why DK said, work, my brothers. The simplification of the world's problems in terms of matter comes through a recognition of the essential dualism underlying events. I commend this thought to all students. You know, there's always the soul, there's always the personality, at least at our stage. And we are those beings who are eventually adjudicators between the pairs of opposites when we graduate from this planet. And, you know, it can be soul and personality, it can be spirit and matter, but we learn the difference on this planet. I commend this thought to all students, suggesting that they base optimism on a long-range vision, not on the immediate horrors of the moment, endorsed by the heavens and corroborated by the activity of the stars. So beautiful. Long-range vision endorsed by the heavens and corroborated by the activity of the stars, and thus feel sure of the ending of this immediate tragic situation. Now he's talking about World War II. It did end. The forces of good emerged, but there's that section of the Bible where the man is cleaning his house and he's a devil, a particular devil, doesn't find it so congenial anymore. So he goes away and tries to make his way, but he'd rather be back in that nice house. So he takes seven of his devil friends, who are even worse than he is, and he goes back to the house, and they invade and infest the house. Who's the house? The house is our energy system. This is our house, okay? I build a lighted house. The devils come back. And the man, the owner of the house, because he was not sufficiently attentive, you know, he suffers even more through the presence of even more powerful devils who entered. Seven of them, I guess. That's how it shows up in the scripture. Who entered his house and caused further havoc. Okay, friends, I know it was a long read, but maybe some thoughts came to you. What I'm going to do is go back here and capture this. And I don't know. It looks like 28 is next. I'll have to sort that out with my handlers, as it were. I get myself a little bit confused as to the numbering, and but not now anyway. So I'm calling this the end of 27, and we went from 441 to something else, and end of 444, okay, almost 445. So 444/445, and today is the 25th of January, 2019. Amazing that we've come that far. And beginning of number 28. And, well, you know, we'll see when the next one really is. I'm just going to put it ahead a week, and it would be the 1st of February. So, 1 February and 19. Okay. All right. So, and we would be beginning on 444, and it would be for this one anyway, the evening schedule. Let your friends know that this work has been done. If you find that you have missed some of these and you want to go into the details of the underlying energies and how they are affecting the whole process, then just go to Makara and it will be put on for you, or write to me, and if I'm successful, I can send you a link if the Makara link is not yet there, but so often it is, and B.L. Allison takes care of it right away and gets it up there. All right. So I assume that you've had a little chance to think about these things as we've gone along, and I will, you know, you can raise your hand, you can ask questions, whatever. And it looks like Anne Veronica's had her hand up. Please, is it possible to send out the Decanate chart? Yeah, I can do that. Matter of fact, what can I do right this very minute? It's a pretty complicated chart, Anne Veronica. But nevertheless, you know, so it requires a little explanation. But okay. Let's see. Sorry. I don't want to get too hung up here. Decanates. Uh-huh. And it's found under this thing called USR Conference a long time ago, 2007, Esoteric Astrology pre-conference. Well, I'll tell you what. Just put your... Oh, I'd like to just send this to everybody so that they could get it. USR General Document Transfer. I don't want to take too much time here, and I'm liable to get a little bit lost.
Michael, can I work with Joe and VL on how to get that out to everyone?
Yeah, you can. The thing is, I was trying to get it to you, so you could get it to them, and I didn't succeed.
No, I think I might have gotten it a couple of years ago.
Okay, good, okay. That's great. Then if you have it, then let's just get it into the chat box or whatever, and we'll do our best to have people understand what it is. That's great, Michael, if you have that. Okay. Terrific, thank you. See, every once in a while, the voice of God can help you if you're in an emergency situation. All right. Now, Vera, go ahead.
Yeah. Michael, if the triangles, as you mentioned, can be horizontal, vertical, they can be any type of triangles. The first part of the question, can there be a triangle, say, consisting of largely maybe six-ray energy on the constellation planetary levels? And if that's the case, if triangles can be of any kind, then the question is, why triangles? Are they actually triangles? Are they relevant to our current evolutionary sort of on the evolutionary arch, like the triangles evolution of consciousness?
Yeah, okay, it's according to the law of mutation, and the triangular interrelationship keeps on changing, and on our particular planet, and even in our particular solar system, the triangles have for their main focus the development of consciousness, because that's how it is in our solar system and its degree of advancement. Later, the triangles will have for their aim the development of the will in the next solar system. So, and we know we also have something called triangles in rotation, where different aspects of the triangle, either the first, second, or third aspect, is in the ascendancy for a certain period, and then it shifts, and then the more powerful aspect comes in. So basically right now, these triangles, although there are some strictly will triangles, they tend to support not the development of matter per se, that was the last solar system, but the development of consciousness. And even now, our solar logos has somewhat blocked the inflow of dynamic will into his system because he needs to concentrate on consciousness. That's what we are told when we go to Esoteric Psychology 1 and look at the old commentary for the first ray. So, okay, so when it comes to these triangles, rays seem to be associated with planetary sources, stellar sources, constellational sources. Other than that, they seem to have no point of application. So when you're involving creating triangles of rays, you're also involving astronomical, astrological factors at the same time. It's much more difficult to detect a ray which is somehow less anchored in a form than it is to find a triangle of anchored forms. But nevertheless, rays go along with it. And, you know, like if we have the first ray, it's Aries, zodiacally, it's Aries, Leo, Capricorn. But we're not talking about the first ray in a vacuum. It always has to be connected, at least in what we're given and at this time of evolution, with some kind of tangible source that we normally consider astrological or astronomical. Mm-hmm. Further?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, Vera. Thank you. Thank you for the question. I never really can answer these questions. I can indicate the direction through which further study will bring revelation, you know. But when it comes to going on the ray path, the fifth great cosmic path, we do have a constellational sort of destiny which takes us to a particular type of constellation. Just the way it is on any of the other paths, they all end in a particular constellation in the one about whom naught may be said. And then finally they end within the Pleiades itself. So there's this intermixture of rays and the astronomical, astrological factors. And, you know, every question is unique unto itself and depends upon the astronomical, astrological factors involved and the rays involved. But generally, you don't go just looking for a ray which is detached from some universal focus. At least that's my experience at the moment. Okay, now let's see what else we've got here. Yeah, okay, and they're working on that, Anne Veronica, they're working on that to get this to everybody. Are there questions, friends, or are there statements which you would like to make? And if I don't see it, Michael, you help me here. I know, you know, it's, what can I say? It's astrological material, but the way the spiritual astrology reaches us is via triangles. Everything, you know, look at the triangularity of things. Let's see, over here. Let's see, right here, for instance, if I can go a little further. I mean, look, you know, here are all of these chakras in our systems, and the spiritual parts are triangularized. And when you look at the egoic lotus, it's fivefold, and yet it's fourfold, and yet it's threefold. And certainly within the normal nine petals, triangularization is required. And within any circle of petals, triangularization is required. Three synthesis petals, you know. Three is a charm, and it's a type of completeness, and it gradually enlarges into the circle. And we're talking here about the Antikorana, which is considered to be a triangle, interestingly enough, not just a straight line. That's only one third of the process. It begins somewhere here where you're contacting the soul, and It works with the abstract mind, and it also works with a more direct kind of first ray approach, which the Tibetan has given us. Here's the spiritual triad, and we notice here that even the monad is triangular. So we have to see which one of the three aspects of divinity represented by the three vertices of the triangle is operative at any one time, and which is meant to be in the ascendant, as it were. When you look at the astrological chart, I don't know, where is the astrological chart? Let's just say, well, I think you can understand what I'm going to say. The triangle of the ascendant, sun and the moon, is fundamental to the interpretation of the astrological chart in terms of the past, present, and future. And then there's another triangle, which in which the sun position holds the lowest place. The sun, the ascendant, and the point opposite the sun, which takes us all the way to the monad. And when you're dealing with the spirit aspect in an astrological chart, it's drawn out in the charts of the masters as blue triangles. Consciousness is drawn out as yellow stars, and material processes are drawn out as black squares. So all of this geometry, all of this color, it represents different phases of our involvement with energy. So as you go through life, look for the triangle. Look for the three aspects of divinity in anything. For a human being, it's principally the monad, the soul, and the personality, or monad, triad, soul, personality. Those are the three. So, now why did I say all that? Anyway, be alert to the triangularization which is occurring around you. And when you work with people, perhaps a triangular formation is a very useful one. And when you want to bring the soul into incarnation via the divine plan, work with DK's triangle methods, indicating a type of work which must go on.
Michael.
Yes, Michael.
And Veronica also asked, could the triangles be the base of a pyramid in a 3D aspect? I also had the same question. Why triangles, circles, yes, the triangles, why?
Okay, because there's always three aspects of divinity, and Veronica, now what you're talking about is a tetrahedron. And a tetrahedron is not, of course, a pyramid. Interesting. The pyramid has the square and triangles on the side, but the tetrahedron has four sides, which are triangles, and at any one point, the base will be triangular, as well as the three other sides. And in the Platonic solids, it particularly represents the element of fire. Each one of these different solids, I've got to get them straight in my mind, but I know the tetrahedron is the factor that represents fire. So the reason the triangle is because the way the universe is laid out, there are always three aspects of divinity, and the relationship of triangles between any three entities allows these three aspects to interact and to be prominent at any one period of history. Now, you know, in astronomy, if you take a, well, what you're creating there, I can't really draw that at the moment, but here's a circle and here's a triangle. And if you keep shortening those, they're called chords, chords geometry, and you will find that it's possible to eventually have such a polygon within the center of a circle that it approximates infinity. And when it reaches, and when the different chords of any geometrical figure, let's just say an n-sided polygon within a circle, becomes every side becomes infinitely short, then you have what you can call as a circle. So the circle is the final, the circle or sphere is the final figure. And when we talk about what the universe is, we call it a sphere, an intelligible sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. So that's the ultimate figure that we can see, at least in three dimensions. And when we get beyond three-dimensional limitations, maybe something else will appear. Let's just say a sphere, in a way, has infinite dimensions. When you look at the chords of any geometrical figure inscribed in the sphere, shortening, to take in every aspect of that continuous circle. So the main reason, anyway, why a triangle? Because in the way things divide from the one to the two, they go to the three, and it's a major geometrical archetype which contains the three aspects of divinity which are necessary for the emanative manifestation of the universe. Everything is based on those three. Now, the three is based on the two and the one, but if you even look at the two and the one, you're finding a kind of a triangle. So behind it all, and all emanation and all manifestation, lies will, lies wisdom, lies activity, lies the one, the two, the three. It's just fundamental to the structure of our universe, and maybe, who knows, maybe to all universes. So that's why the triangle. Because we're not there yet. We have not identified to such an extent that we have re-become the whole. When we're going to descend into particularity and limitation, we need the triangle. And when we reascend into total identification and sameness, the circle or sphere will be a better image for us to describe that archetype. Hope that helps a little.
I am seeing no more hands or questions.
Okay, thanks, Michael. All right, well, friends, look, I always end with this kind of statement that, hey, this is, this book is considered to be his most occult book. He considers it, because it deals entirely with energies. And we're into a new force in psychology. It's not just transpersonal psychology. It is what we call the psychology of the fifth force, which tries to understand the actual energies and their contrasts, which create any entity, including a cosmos. So this is a psychology of energy particularity. And we have to use that good old fifth ray to nail these things and understand what they are. You know, focus the laser of the mind on the thing itself, what it is, and then eventually how it relates to other things. And eventually all things come together in the synthesis under Mercury and Jupiter, and you're back to the oneness, which, in a sense, denies the self-existence of all variety. So, in other words, we have to study the particularities. And some of us, we say, well, I don't have the fifth ray, but everybody has the fifth ray. I don't have the fifth ray in the normal sense either. But, you know, everybody has this as part of the equipment of the mental plane. Not only the lower mind, but there's a fifth ray component, the orange component, in the solar angel and in the higher vehicle on the higher mind. So study the particularities, understand them, and then triangulate them and see how the dynamic might work. Some are really easy. You know, if we put together the head, the heart, and the throat, we can kind of understand what will, love, and intelligence are. But there are many other triangles which give us different things. And we have to understand the particularities of each point in the triangle, and not only the particularities, but their relationship at any time in space, according to the law of mutation. And this mutation is not random. It is all governed by a great purpose and a plan in time and space. It's beyond the human intellect at the moment, okay, but we'll get there, and we start by knowing what energies exist, which are available now, how long they last, how long they are related. We study in that way. And pretty soon, you know, when we look at something, it's not just what it is, it represents something more fundamental in an energy sense. Now, for practical purposes, we have, you know, our simple triangle meditation, which is done with other people like ourselves who are becoming soul-infused personalities. And that's very practical, because it just leads to right human relations. Let's just say if we all concentrated on the light for a moment, and this is the light of growing intensity, which is going to be distributed in our triangles, as is the energy of love, and eventually the energy of will, or the will to good. And every day we try to begin our day as Master DK advises: sit back, rest back, and link up with him and with our soul, solar angel, our angel of the presence, and with the highest head center we have. So we're going to create a triangle of light between our soul, our head center, and the master. And we hold that triangle steady, and there's a picture of it, kind of. The light orange, a golden color, touching the soul and touching the master. They both work on the higher mental plane, and then touching our own thousand petal lotus. So let's just kind of confirm that. And this is what Master DK can handle. And he tells us, you know, bathe in it as you would bathe in the waters of the sea, and leave the rest to me. And these are the students he was supervising, and he's going to be one of the externalizing masters. And I'm sure that even on the physical plane, quite a number of us, if that is our home ashram, so to speak, will be working with him and under his guidance. We try to sense the triangle above the square, and we want the fusion of those two factors, particularly of soul and personality in this case. the three and the four must come together. It gives us the seven, and we can begin to feel, you know, when that higher light, higher love, higher sacrificial will begins to be present to us in our personality. And just for a moment, you know, maybe you don't have time to go through all your triangles right now, but just think of your little network, whether it's one triangle or 50 or whatever. Think of your little network and the love and the light that passes through that network. And our little network, you know, becomes more and more vivid. Ultimately, the energies we're working with come from far distant sources, but we can apply them right here and right now until we're linking up with, well, not only with the triangles network of our planet, and not only with the three Buddhas of activity, great beings, relatively, who used to be planetary logoi in the previous major solar system, but are helping Sanat Kumara at this time. But the network goes on beyond our planet, obviously, in the etheric body of our solar logos and in the etheric body of the cosmic logos. I mean, that's just speculative, but we know it exists. And beyond, between constellations which comprise the chakras of the one about whom not may be said, and on and on and on. Triangular constructions, bringing the archetype. So we will actually link our own little group with the planetary group and with the three Buddhas, and then, if we want to think of it, the triangles that in which Earth is involved, you know, like Earth, Venus, Mars, or Earth, Mercury, Venus, many, many planetary triangles. And stellar triangles and so forth. The general principle is what's important. We're in this great etheric, planetary, and superplanetary, and supersystemic, and even universal network. When we work together, we say the great invocation. It is our best means of preparing the way for the externalization and the reappearance. And it does something within our triangle network. The triangles become invocative of higher triangles and higher sources, and eventually we're going to have a humanity that is soul infused. So let's together sound the great invocation. from the point of light within the mind of God. Let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center, where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Well, friends, we work at trying to create at least 100,000 triangles of a vivid nature. So goes the story, apparently handed down from Alice Bailey, apparently, and I suppose handed down from the Tibetan. Not that we, you know, want to put definite numbers on it, but that's the order of magnitude of what we need to turn things around. So carry daily an awareness of the triangles in your mind and heart, and refer to them, you know, even a flash of thought, referring to this great spiritual network in which we find ourselves immersed. Even a flash of thought can strengthen the network and strengthen your relationship to the network. And here's a little invocation asking for your meditative and tangible support for these efforts so they can go on. And we seek to help our fellow brothers and sisters, all human beings, move towards the fifth kingdom of nature. So you can write globaltriangles@gmail.com, or you can write to me or Tuya, infinitize8@gmail.com, infinitize8@gmail.com, or Tuya, Tuya.S.Robbins@gmail.com. And we'll get you on the list. But the most important thing is that you know you're on the list of those who are functioning in this way, whether or not you're part of some official list, just as long as we're doing the work. If you want to prepare for the Christ consciousness and its gathering in the chalice, the Blue Rose Sisterhood, which also includes the Shiva Brothers, may be for you, and we do some broadcasts doing deity yoga, just as the Dalai Lama does, the refinement of the understanding of what the deities really are, and calling upon them to build the qualities into the causal body which all of us have yet to perfect. The Maurya Federation will give you the deep education in esotericism that is very useful. And, you know, some people finish in 5 years and some maybe finish in 10 years. You know, the program can be tailored to your time possibilities. Behind it all, the University of the Seven Rays, which helps to bring in the new esoteric psychology particularly. It's not just an individual psychology, it's planetary, it's solar systemic and beyond. We have learned that Cosmic Fire is a book in esoteric psychology. Amazing. Harold and I have music. You can find it by writing to us or also on the various websites. If you go to YouTube, a lot of the music is there. And also the solar fire rituals are there in case you want to listen and meditate with them. So we thank you very much, Tuya and I. And tonight, we kind of keep going. We have the Dissipation of Glamour webinar. If for any reason you don't have the link, the links are staying the same now, you know. All of the Science of Triangles links is the same every week or every 2 weeks. The Dissipation of Glamour is the same every week. So try to get a hold of that so you can use it. And if not, just write to us and we'll send it to you. And in lots of the mail coming from Constant Contact of the Maurya Federation, those webinar links are listed. I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank Michael for backing us up here on the technical side. And we work together as a group to help bring things together in unity and eventual oneness so that the hierarchical state of mind, the mind that is in Christ, can be the mind that is in us. And we'll learn what Venus has to offer as our systemic prototype, and as a twin sister of Venus, we will come closer and closer to fulfilling our spiritual destiny, even as Venus has already done. So many blessings, lots of love. We'll see you later in another 10 hours, roughly, if you'd like to join us. And on we go. Tomorrow, the Soul of Nations, and on Sunday, attracting financial resources for the hierarchy. Appreciate your presence. Bye-bye.